Welcome to the Embodiment Conference. My name is. Oh, it's just not going to work at all. Never accept a dare from Mark Walsh. Welcome to the Embodiment Conference. My name is Leslie Kaminoff, and you may know me as the co-author of the international bestseller, Yoga Anatomy. But I'm also the co-founder of yogaanatomy.net. Now, that's a platform we built 11 years ago where we offer online courses and in-depth anatomy modules that support teachers, teacher trainings, and students all over the world. So that's why we are thrilled to be sponsoring all the incredible sessions here on the Yoga Channel, including my own. And if you feel a connection with the way I teach, I have some great news for you. We are extending scholarships to all members of the Embodiment Conference. And you can find that scholarship info and links to yogaanatomy.net in the description for this presentation and in the show notes. In the meantime, enjoy your body, enjoy your breath, and enjoy your conference. And I'll see you online.
Okay, welcome. So on the conference tonight, Rod Stryker, who I think really is one of the premier yoga teachers out there. I was actually looking at doing his teacher training myself a little while back, even though it was in the States. I thought, you know what, I might fly over because I'd heard such good things. Founder of Para Yoga, author, and also quite kind of up to date, his app Sanctuary is very good. So I enjoyed interviewing him for my podcast a little while back, and I'm sure we'll enjoy tonight. So, Rod, over to you, sir. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Mark, and I'm thrilled to be part of this event, and I'm really honored to be actually part of it. So I have the pleasure of actually discussing Yoga Nidra, which is the subject of the book I'm almost done writing. November 1st, my publisher is expecting the book, so hopefully I am almost done. And Yoga Nidra is a methodology that I'm quite certain that many people are familiar with. I first experienced it in 1980 and began teaching it about 10, not even, actually more, about 15 years later. I was, my first teacher who introduced it to me was actually a student of the same man. Excuse me, a student of, a brother student, if you will, of the same man who really helped advance the knowledge of Yoga Nidra in the West, which was Swami Satyananda Saraswati. And many people who actually are familiar with Yoga Nidra should probably credit Swami Satyananda Saraswati. My teacher was what they call Guru Bhai. This was his guru brother. And he also learned about Yoga Nidra. And I first encountered it, as I said, in about 1980. I started teaching it in the later 90s, but really only after I found Swami Satyananda Saraswati's book, because I must be honest, although when I first experienced it, I had some profound, really profound experiences. But my teacher didn't go out of his way to explain really what he was doing and what he was sharing. He was a tantric master who primarily focused on meditation, asana, pranayama, mudra, mantra. But there was this one component I can remember. He would invariably teach it in the evening where he led us on these journeys. So let's talk about Yoga Nidra, because there's a few things I want to actually discuss, because there are a lot of assumptions about Yoga Nidra, and perhaps our conversation can widen, those of you who are familiar can widen, familiar with Yoga Nidra, can widen your understanding of it. That's part of my aim today. And also really go a little further and in giving you an experience of it. To understand where I'm coming from as it relates to Yoga Nidra, I should tell you that that was my first exposure to it. As I said, very akin to the methodology and the template that's taught by Swami Satyananda Saraswati. And interestingly enough, if you look, at least in the United States, there three or four, the four most influential schools of Yoga Nidra would be the Bihar school, which is Swami Satyananda Saraswati's legacy, something called I-Rest that was developed by Richard Miller, Dr. Richard Miller, Amrit Yoga Nidra, or Amrit Nidra. And all three actually apply a similar template. about 12, 15 years, about 15 years ago, after having taught that particular approach, I'd already begun to study in the lineage of another Himalayan master. His name was Swami Rama. Some of you might know his work and his legacy through an organization called the Himalayan Institute. And Swamiji was the only teacher of Yoga Nidra that I know of who was actually clinically shown to be capable of what Yoga Nidra is advertised as. So what is it? It's said to be a kind of transcendent sleep. And when we say transcendent, we can really go into quite a few different avenues of study. But the first would be to suggest that in sleep, we can actually be simultaneously aware. Swami Rama proved that this was possible because as he was put himself in lab studies, a place called the Menninger Institute in Kansas in the early 70s. And by the way, at that time, Western scientific understanding was that you could not simultaneously be aware and awake. Even at that time, the science of the West had really not interfaced with the idea that you could even control your autonomic nervous system. So he was one of the pioneers of where science began to meet these esoteric studies in science, techniques and methodology. So the second influence, and really what kind of turned my sense of what Yoga Nidra was, it could be, and what in fact expanded it considerably, was his lineage of teaching. Very distinct. So the first thing I want to do is just lay out some basic ideas. Number one, as significant as Yoga Nidra has become in recent years and recent decade, more or less, the fact is it's not new. It's not new. It's not new to this century. It's not new to the last century. And unfortunately, many teachers actually are kind of coming from that point of view. They say they invented it. If you read Swami Satyananda's book, you actually see in the introduction to that book, he mentions that he created something called Yoga Nidra. So if I could just very quickly cite, and this comes from a fantastic article that maybe I'll refer to, give you a sense of. If you don't mind, I'm just going to take you to a document. Oh, let's see. That's not what I want to show you. That's not what I want to show you either. Hold on. Here we go. So this is a brief touchstone about the history of Yoga Nidra. And we're not going to go into that in great depth today. There's no point in doing that. It's simply, and by the way, let me give credit to the authors of this article. There you are, the luminescent blogspot, Yoga Nidra, HTML. If you have any interest in reading a little more in depth about it, my point by bringing this up to you is to really dissuade anyone of the notion that this has been invented created in the last 100 years even. We see it mentioned, this term Yoga Nidra mentioned way back when, somewhere around the beginning of the Common Era, and it's mentioned in the Mahabharata. We see it mentioned in a scripture called the Devi Mahatmyam. And then, of course, really most significantly, and this is what Swami Rama referred to as the core of the teaching of Yoga Nidra, was something called the Mandukya Upanishad, which again, you can see the dates here. We're seeing it 1300, 1400 years ago. And the Mandukya begins to talk about this transcendent state that's described as the fourth. And I'll get to that in just a moment. You see further on the development of it by the great Shankaracharya, who actually writes a scripture called the Yogacaravali. So I just want to bring it to everyone's attention so that we're on the same page. This is not a new practice. We then see in later developments, it appear in Buddhist texts and in Tantric texts, and you can see this kind of lineup that we progress, the chronology of where we see it cited. So we'll stop the share. We'll get back to the essence of what this is all about. The suggestion in the Mandukya Upanishad is that normative human experience is can be divided into three different expressions. These are the three attributes of consciousness. And I just want to kind of foreshadow it by saying it's important. It's interesting to note that they don't really talk about delusion. They don't really talk about limitation. They don't really talk about good or bad. They simply say there's waking, dreaming, and deep sleep. And each is an expression of this singular reality, which is the basis of Vedanta, the basis of that set of scriptures called the Upanishads and what they're trying to point to, the nature of reality. In short, their point of view is that as long as we're either in the waking, in the dreaming, or in the state of deep sleep, we cannot perceive reality. You and I, of course, you know, it goes without saying that it's the normative experience of human beings is duality. Right from wrong, good from bad, red from blue, healthy from unhealthy, you know, pre-pandemic, post-pandemic. God, we welcome the post-pandemic days when they come. But it's this seesaw of duality, light and dark, night and day. And what they suggested was because of the limitations of our perception, our senses, memory, we do not encounter reality. And a famous kind of metaphor for this is that when you and I are dreaming, we usually, not always, it's about 10-15% of the time people are aware they're dreaming. Most of us are dreaming. Most dreams occur, and we're identified with our dream. And we might, in the course of the dream, be fearful, aroused, proud, happy, satisfied, unsatisfied, uncertain. And it's only when we come out of that dream are we aware that we were dreaming. For the most part, we're dreaming and we're just dreaming. And then we look back and go, oh, well, thank God that was only a dream, or too bad that was only a dream, right? But while it's happening, it's just dreaming. And what the sages suggested was that life is a dream. That all of the ups and downs that we go through in our life is also but a dream. So Shakespeare said the same thing. The idea that this existence is, as we normally see it, through the state, through the waking state, and even through the dreaming state, it's only just a dream. And that awakening means necessarily that we somehow transcend those three states, those three expressions of consciousness. Now, consciousness exists when we're sleeping, when we're dreaming, and in our waking state, but we don't see this singular reality. So, yoga nidra has become many things. And we can speak to that. I can speak to that in just a couple minutes. But the point being that originally, yoga nidra was intended to be in a state of awakening. It really is a state of entering deep sleep upon which we awaken. Awaken to, and the state is called turiya. Turiya literally in Sanskrit means the fourth. So it's not waking, it's not dreaming, and it's not deep sleep. And so what yoga nidra is sleep plus turiya. The other experience of turiya, in at least in the Vedantic tradition, is the idea of neti neti, is there is a non-identification with stuff, with our stuff. Okay, so that's yoga nidra in the classic sense. Now, I want to just I would feel better if, as a result of this conversation, you never mispronounce nidra ever again. That would make me feel better. It's not nidra. It just isn't. You know, it just simply isn't. It's not like we was, you know, if we're speaking English, we would not say shul, we would say school. And so nidra is important. It's not just correct, it's also important. And the reason for that is that in Sanskrit, the vowels are the shakti. Vowels have power. And the most powerful of all of the vowels is the sound E. So you have words like kundalini, shakti, yogini, or yogi. It means this is the living presence of whatever the word is that comes before it. So if it were nidra, you would not be sleeping. You would be empowered. So the whole idea is you are sleeping. So what does ni mean? Ni, as opposed to ni, kundalini, ni means complete, whole, nothing's missing. And moreover, it's the complete, it means complete dissolution. So we see this word as nirvana. It says, nidra or nirvana is this absolute absorption. And so nidra means sleep. But in our context, yoga nidra has classically been defined as to sleep with awareness. And that's a fine definition. That's a fine definition. It's not the only definition. Another definition that doesn't get a lot of press, doesn't get talked about a lot, is the idea of it is sleep on the cloud of yoga. So what could that possibly mean? To sleep on the cloud of yoga. You know, you might have sensed by now, I may not be a scholar, but I do appreciate the knowledge that these techniques come from. And I try and hold the knowledge next to the practices to verify that what we're practicing has authenticity. The point of what does sleep on the cloud of yoga mean? Well, now we have to figure out what yoga means. What yoga means is the dissolution of duality and the absorption into singularity. It means that subject and object become one. I become one. I merge with whatever I'm paying attention to. There is no distinction between that. In the state of yoga, that's why in the ancient scriptures, yoga is sometimes called samadhi. They're the same thing. Yoga is absorption. So to sleep on the cloud of yoga means that I am resting in a domain where there is no object-subject division. No good, no bad, no me, no you. There's a complete unification between the observer and the observed. That's yoga. Now we can get there through meditation, or we can get there through yoga nidra. Now what's the difference? Yoga nidra, unlike meditation, let's do meditation first. Meditation is cutting through all your distractions, right? So there's initially a focusing on whatever your chosen object is. You become more and more effortlessly focused, and you hold on to the object that you're paying attention to. And in a way, just recognize the tendency to be distracted, and you let go of the distraction, more and more absorption, absorption, absorption. And that's somewhat akin to yoga nidra, but there's a difference. Yoga nidra is, instead of trying to become one with a particular object, it literally is letting go with all identification. The very thing that happens to you when you go to sleep. If you try to go to sleep while you're still identified with your stuff, you don't go to sleep. If your mind is engaged, exactly, neti neti. If your mind is engaged with your job, with your friends, with the pandemic, with politics, with money, with this, with that, we don't fall asleep. Sleep comes when we dissolve all of our relationship to the things that we are preoccupied with. And so yoga nidra is a process of merging with the absolute by letting go of everything that isn't absolute. All right, I'm going to just, because we don't have a lot of time, and if I'm not careful, I'll speak too much. Mark has asked me, and I'm happy to provide an experience for you guys. So I want to do that. Just a couple other things, particularly for those of you who have background in yoga nidra. There's one or two things I want to leave you with that help to illustrate the distinctions between this approach that I subscribed to and that was taught by this master, Swami Rama, and some of the more the other styles, the other more well-known styles. One of Swami Rama's students, his name was Swami Veda, was also a master of Yoga Nidra, and he publishes a paper. And I'm sorry I don't have it to call up on and share the file with you, but I want to give you the gist of it. He said that his master taught that there were four levels of Yoga Nidra. And this is going to be very helpful for you if you do have interest in the practice or if you experience the practice. So the first level is, in essence, relaxation. And I don't think I have to tell many people on in this Zoom webinar that the value of relaxation, the shift from sympathetic to parasympathetic, from fight and flight to rest and digest, how important that is now more than ever. And it's important not only in terms of our day-to-day existence and our ability to respond, not react, the ability to find peace in unpeaceful times, capacity to remain steady in the most turbulent, unsteady circumstances. So relaxation is key. It's just, we can't pretend and really consistent with the theme of this conference, we can't pretend that embodying a certain rhythm of peace is essential to find peace. So number one is relaxation, the shift from parasympathetic to parasympathetic, muscles soften, breath slows down, heart rate slows down, blood flow moves back from our extremities, back to our internal organs. That's called relaxation. And that's not hard to do, you know, if you're willing and you can breathe and you can consciously shape your breath, you can have huge impact in shifting your body to a rhythm of relaxation. And as a result, the mind becomes more internal. And there's another theory, there's another understanding by neurologists who tell us that in the study of the brain has two modes. One is exploitation and one is exploration. When I become more stressed out, I keep repeating what I've already known. My mind doesn't find creativity or inventiveness. When I'm stressed out, I just stick with what I know and I try and navigate what I know. On the other hand, when I relax, I create more spaciousness. What starts to happen is inventiveness, creativity, insight starts to unfold. You know, when you relax, you become aware of what you needed to be aware of, but what couldn't access in a way. So that begins to describe the second level, level two, which is now it's the level of ideation, imagination, creativity. And you'll see that one of the things that many of the most, if not all, of the systems of Yoga Nidra employ is work with imagination, ideas, images, sensations. And we're bound to experience a certain level of insight. There's certainly some purification at a psychic level that's happening. Fundamentally, in level two, is the realm of using different concepts, i.e. images and sensations and different themes in order to gain insight or to produce states of healing, deeper than physiological as relates to level one. Finally, in level three. Now level three, the best description of it, and you actually see the terminology in that article I mentioned in the beginning that I showed you. You see this Sanskrit term called Abhava Pratyaya, Abhava Pratyaya. Many of you, I'm certain, at least some of you will know this term bhav or bhava. It means to cultivate, it means feeling, it means sentiment, it means emotion. But before it means without. So what it means is this is a place beyond emotion or a place and an experience beyond feeling, beyond any ideas, beyond concept. The term pratyaya simply means absorbed. So what is this? This is the state of conscious negation, where you're now not identified with anything. Level three means that you're no longer conceptualizing. You're not conceptualizing this is a great meditation, this is a transcendent state. By the way, if you think you're in transcendence, you are not. Because transcendence is an idea. So if you have an idea that you're in transcendence, you are not. Now, if you're having an experience where you don't know if you are, then you might be. So level three, yeah, right on, David. It's a little mind-blowing, and that's the point. So let me get to the questions in just a minute, because I'll just close with these two ideas. So the point here is that you can't be visualizing stuff and be in a state of yoga nidra. And this is why Swami Rama, and what I'll suggest to you, is that the first two, while often described as yoga nidra, are actually just preparation. Yoga nidra begins at level three, neti neti, beyond all concepts. If you're having a concept, you're not at level three, which my teacher said is not yoga nidra. The fourth state is beyond the beyond. So this may sound really tricky. I don't mean to make it a kind of mental puzzler, but this is what it looks like. The first step, yes, so the earlier steps, you're just preparation for it. Ideally, yoga nidra begins at level three. But in level three, we're having the experience of being nothing. In level four, but by the way, the experience of being nothing is a concept. So the fourth one, the fourth one is truly the experience of being beyond the beyond, okay? Even beyond that. So there we have it. Swami Rama, and I'll go one step further, which will introduce this practice more or less. And we don't have a lot of time. It won't be the longest practice I've ever taught, but it'll give us a chance, if you guys are open to it, for me to lead you through some steps. So as I said, everything leading up to step three is preparation. And by the way, can we get to level three? No. That's actually a great question, Claudia. And that's the one question that really caught my eye. You need to master one and two prior to three. So there's no shortcut in that sense. So the point I was going to make is that while we're in the mode of conceptualizing things, we're not actually doing yoga nidra. And so this means, one, I really want to make the case that yoga nidra is here all along because consciousness is here all along. It's not something we're creating. It's really a process of addition by subtraction. The more you let go, the more you let go and keep letting go, eventually all that's left is essence or consciousness. And that's really why yoga nidra does not have to be a complicated process. It can actually be remarkably simple. And some of the ways it's practiced has made it a kind of very complex template, in which they use a singular template with words like sankalpa and images and sensations. And there's wonderful, that has wonderful opportunities within it. But I want to make the point, you may not actually be doing yoga nidra when you're doing all of that stuff. If you're in your head creating imagery, sensations, all of this stuff, you may be getting very relaxed, but it's actually not the same as abhava pratyaya or neti neti, which is what yoga nidra is. And I won't bother right now turning back to the scriptures, but this is what they say. So yoga nidra then, fundamentally, the actual state that I've described, I've tried my best to describe the undescribable, it's two things, two possibilities. One is that the body is physically sleeping, and there is an awareness in this heart space. Now, this is not the same as meditation, so it's not like you're going to try and focus in your heart center, heart chakra. It's heart space, as in a state of pure being. Now, obviously, we need some steps to get there. But the actual practice is resting in pure beingness, but not in subject-object division. You are the space. The space is you. So that's one way, he said, yoga nidra is practiced. It's not the physical heart. It's not the heart chakra. it's the space of pure being. You are the space is you. The other way he described it is that we ultimately, and it has some stages that he taught, but that ultimately we rest in the heart. Now, this is also a resting in the heart, in which we objectify the state of sleep. It doesn't mean that we are asleep. It means that literally we are aware, and our awareness holds the state of sleep, but we are consciousness observing the state of sleep. Okay. The last thing I want to say, and this is just the last myth I want to just blow up. Falling asleep, even as I lead you through it or whoever leads you through it, if I'm talking you through the steps of Yoga Nidra, but you are asleep as in unconscious, that's not Yoga Nidra. That's called a nap. Just to be clear, okay? This common understanding has been now that you can sleep. If the teacher or the recording is still playing, you're doing Yoga Nidra. I'm sorry, you're not. You're just not. That's not Yoga Nidra. It's called a nap. And you just picked maybe someone's nice voice to lead you through your nap. Okay? So how do you stay aware? Human beings are very tired. We're tired. We don't get enough rest. And so there's a high likelihood of falling asleep when you get relaxed. One thing that I learned is that you rest. I'm sorry you can't quite see all of me, but I'm going to put my elbow on the floor as I'm lying down. By the way, this can be done in a lounge chair. If you fall asleep constantly, you can do it on your side. You can do it in a chair. And as I sleep, I would have one elbow on the floor with my forearm vertical. My fingers are not rigid, but they're relatively straight. What you'll notice is that as you start to drift toward the unconsciousness of sleep, the hand will drop. And I would say 8 times out of 10, that's enough to remind you to stay aware. Okay? So let's do this. Why don't we do a short practice? And your intention is to stay aware. Okay? I will lead you through it. Feel free to lie down. If you don't have the benefit of a comfortable space to lie down in, then as much as possible, get really comfortable in a chair, or if you have a lounge chair, that's also okay. I'll give you another minute or two just to go ahead and physically adjust and be prepared. Yeah. And and for the sake of just giving you one less thing to be distracted by, if you don't mind, I'm going to shut off my video as I walk you through this. And just because this is done eyes closed. And go ahead and get really comfortable. Again, I'm just going to ask you to take give everyone another minute or so just to settle. The general prescription is that your heels are a little wider than your hips. So one way you can correct the placement of the legs is to internally rotate your thighs so that your toes touch, big toes touch. And if they touch, that means you're slightly too close. So take your heels just a little wider and then let the legs go completely and they will externally rotate. Make any final adjustments. Your arms are by your side. And another hint, guideline, is that your palms face up. Ideally, nothing touches your fingertips because we prefer not to stimulate the sensory nerves, the sensory motor pathways at the tips of your fingers. That'll help deepen your letting go. So close your eyes. If the room is bright, we also recommend that something's covering your eyes. So just take a moment to observe where you are. And when I say where you are, just for the time being, just the sense of your body occupying the physical space you're in. Notice the extent to which your mind is outward. aside from my voice, perceiving the various sounds. Observing total absence of sound is all but impossible. So rather than trying to manipulate what you hear or don't hear, just be aware. Just be aware. You're not trying to change the sounds, not trying to change how you feel in this moment. Simple recognition and acceptance is what you're in the process of right now. Please bring your awareness to your breath. Notice your body breathing. Specifically, observe the movement of your abdomen. So, abdomen is soft. Chest is relatively still. Now, please begin to consciously shape the rhythm of the breath. Emphasizing diaphragmatic abdominal breathing. You're not necessarily breathing your fullest breaths. It might be, say, a third or maybe as much as a half of your lung capacity. But have the intention to keep the chest still and clear, the abdomen soft. Your abdomen softens and floats away from the spine as you breathe in, and it floats toward the spine as you breathe out. And for the next 2 minutes or so, I'm going to ask you to continue to do this. Continue to shape your breath consciously so that it is slow and smooth. At the same time, be aware of how this practice is beginning to affect the mind, affect the body. In short, you're using your breath to shape the mind and the body, and you're using your mind to shape the breath. So you are simultaneously breathing and aware of yourself breathing. For this last minute or so, just be aware of any involuntary pauses in the flow. Or any stages of the breath, any portions of it that are less than smooth. 3 or 4 more rounds, please. Now allow the breath to return to a balanced and smooth rhythm, shifting back to an involuntary flow. gradually sense the breath flowing at the perfect rhythm for this moment. So you relax at the end of each inhale. And you relax at the end of each exhale. And gradually you sense, I am not the breather. I am spacious awareness, experiencing my body breathing. And become aware of sensation. Some familiar, some absolutely unique for this moment. Aware of sensation. Please observe any sensations of contraction. Have the intention to let go of all restriction, all contraction. Each exhale, a deepening of that surrender. The more you let go, the more you are supported. Now you have or enter the experience, I am not the doer. I am the silent witness. Spacious awareness. Rest in the heart space. The source of unsurpassed tranquility. And sense the breath arise and return to that spacious heart. Space of pure being. Body sleeps, mind sleeps, awareness remains aware. Please slowly find your breath again. Be aware of yourself, how you occupy that physical space of the body, and how the body occupies the physical space of the room that you're in. Now slowly begin to deepen your breath so that the breath reaches towards your hands and your feet. So it's important not to rush back, but to take your time and to ease back. Consciously breathing towards your hands and your feet. If you want, you can physically rub your hands together at this point and put the palms over your eyes. Whether you're still lying down or sitting is fine. And then gradually start to physically move the rest of your body. And we'll take our time and we'll sit up and ease back. So let's come back. Let's all come back. All right, so that's a glimpse. Now, there are a couple of pieces that if we had more time, I would have put in. One is the teaching on Shava Yatra, which means Shava means corpse and or the body, and Yatra means journeying. So there are different ways of moving consciousness into. Swami Rama used Marma points. And so that helps to deepen the relaxation, prepare us to enter the state. Later, there's a practice called 80 breaths, which is a kind of Kriya practice. So with the time we have left, I thought I would answer a couple of the questions or some really terrific questions and some important questions maybe. Are there any contraindications? So there are two things. One is, as it relates to contraindications, here what I would say is if there is any kind of psychosis or any kind of serious emotional or mental imbalances, that yoga nidra, while it can be healing because it moves us closer to a state of coherence or wholeness or where the parts are undivided and we come together. But I would offer that the practice should be done sitting, not lying down, because lying down leaves us more vulnerable, as it were, to kind of track into whatever direction our imbalances might lead us. You can do the same practices, but do them sitting. The second thing to say is that if you are recently off consistent use of recreational drugs, you also should be careful of the same way. It's helpful, but we should be doing it sitting as opposed to lying down, because it's hard to, at that point, we have so many more variables into the equation. So that's the first thing I want to address. I think there was one other question. There was a question about practice. I mean, Mark mentioned it. I want to put that out there, or maybe Mark's going to come back to that, which is that I do have an app that offers an array. I think there's 25 different yoga nidras at this point. The app is called Sanctuary. Let's see. There was one other question that I really wanted to, that I thought I should grab. Go ahead, Mark.
One in the Q&A, it's been upvoted by a lot of people, which is what's a good online resource for doing yoga nidra?
Well, I would offer mine, my app, to be honest with you. It's basically it put in all of the practices that speak to these different ways of approaching yoga nidra. And so that would be, you can find that Sanctuary. On terms of online, and by the way, my app also has some free practices you can do. So I think that we have a few online. When the other ones, I can't speak with any authority about what else is out there, Mark.
Okay.
Anything else I can answer before we go?
Yeah, there's a couple more in here. If yoga nidra is amazing, and I think like a lot of people, I believe it is, someone's asking why has it taken so long to kind of come to public attention?
Well, it's a really good question. It's hard to say. When I was introduced to it in the 80s, and even when I started teaching in the 90s, no one had heard of it. I'm not 100% certain why that's the case, why it has taken so long. But, you know, it did reach its tipping point, and enough people figured out that, holy smokes, I can really have a profound experience and actually not move my body? Someone asked that question about, well, why asana? I would say asana, you know, has very little significance in terms of transcendence. Asana is a nice way to stay healthy, nice way to keep your organs and nervous system in shape, but it's physical practice of asana is not, doesn't even come close to approaching the depth of the experience possible through yoga nidra or through meditation.
It was maybe something that sort of Western culture needed to get used to just doing the asana first. And
to a large degree. I don't know why it has. I mean, Swami Rama was teaching yoga nidra in the 70s, didn't get so well known. And Swami Satyananda Saraswati's book was, I think, early 70s or late 60s. And so it just took a long time. And who knows? It just needed to be found by the right people who began to spread word of its power.
And maybe last question then, can you transition to this state from lucid dreaming? And that's from Rachel.
Rachel, I saw your question. It's an interesting question. You know, the truth is that the yogis felt that sleep was closer. The experience of sleep was the actual portal to the absolute. So they found, because dreams are actually a manifestation of subconscious experience, memory plus imagination. So therefore, they found sleep to be a more precise or pristine landscape to enter in order to go to transcendence rather than dreaming. I would actually say it would be the other order. If you wanted to do lucid dreaming, and by the way, yoga nidra is to sleep what lucid dreaming is to dreaming. So the idea here is we're not dreaming, we're not the dream, we're actually perceiving ourselves dreaming. Yoga nidra is perceiving yourself sleeping. And since sleep is the kind of final frontier, those of you who are familiar with the koshas, it's the, when we sleep, we're in our anandamaya kosha, this kind of final layer of being that's not quite the soul. So we enter it through sleep, but now with the trace of awareness, we're able to go beyond it. So I would say lucid dreaming is prior to lucid sleeping or yoga nidra.
Okay, we do need to wrap up. So Rod, thank you. I feel rejuvenated from that after a pretty long day. It's not quite over. So I was like, nice. I'm joining in this one.
Smart man.
One in the morning. So much appreciated personally. And I can see a lot of love in the chat here. We'll also put your website up as well. So there it is. So people have got your details. As ever, there is lots and lots of stuff you're not catching people out there. So if you do want to make sure you've got access to everything, look at the recordings, the library. Just right now, for example, Bessel van der Kolk was on, who is very cool, and two or three other very good teachers, just like this hour. I mean, it's a feast. So I spoke to someone today and they said, I'm going to watch one session a day for the next 3 years. And I laughed. He said, no, really, they are. They said every morning, that's their plan, breakfast for the next 3 years. Awesome. People have bought, maybe they could say why. It's kind of interesting to see sort of what anyone that's listening say, like, why you upgraded, but it's all there. Facebook, loads of great discussions. If people want to start a yoga nidra thread, go for it. And as ever, there will be a coffee break after this. If you go to the portal, little three dots top right, click on those, red coffee cup. Then you can actually speak to some other human beings, particularly if you've had a strong experience. It's quite nice just to chat to people, to hang out. There's a really good vibe there as well. So I think they're the main things. Dee, is there anything you want to add before I hand back to Rod?
No, that's all good. I've put all the links in the chat. So if you can have a scroll down, and also I'll go to the Facebook Live, which is TEC Yoga channel on Facebook, and I'll add all of the links there to Rod's work.
Okay. Divya, who's also one of our presenters that was asking that question, by the way. I think that's my friend Divya from London, who's
presenter. I'm the other D.
Shout out. No, not D. Divya, there's somebody asked a really good question. Okay, cool. So I'm going to hand back to Rod for the final word. We're putting a book together, Rod, of kind of top tips from unembodiment from all the presenters, like one sentence from all 1,000 presenters. So what would you like to add to it?
The simple answer is that God is still in the building. It's a crowded, panic-filled building, but if you slow down, you can see the truth and you can see a clear path ahead.
Beautiful, Rod, a pleasure. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for including me in this amazing event. Mm-hmm.